Hello, and welcome to another episode of May the Power Protect You, a podcast where we talk about everything that goes on with Power Rangers, including some new reveals of Sentai and some really fun episodes, and maybe an extra voice or two this episode, and just, you know, everything that goes on in the Morphin Grid. I'm one of your hosts, Joel, and with me, as always, is...
Oh, I gotta come up with a quip. It's Kevin.
There were so many good ones to pull from this episode, Kevin. I expected you to be like on top of this this time.
That's the gag. That was the line from the episode, so it's fine.
Oh, it was. Oh, yay.
Are you even a real fan?
I guess not. especially if you talk to some of these people online. But
yeah,
Kevin, we're not alone today. There are two others with us. Who could they be? It's Derek and Doug!
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Unleash the power?
Oh, thank God.
Question mark?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's it. That, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was the voices in my head again.
Those are many, but unfortunately, no, can't record those.
True. That's true.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about a good season of Power Rangers.
Yes, yes,
and some
yes.
Shit. Yes, yes, yes.
We do love that, yes.
It's some truly wild things that happened in these episodes that I forgot about. And as I was watching, I was like, oh, right, this is a thing that happened. That's mm-hmm. wild.
Mm-hmm. It's a good time.
But, yeah, we've got, like, obviously the other big thing is we'll talk about shortly, but before we get started, like we do every week, we want to take a moment to encourage our listeners to find a way that you can be a hero out in the world. Mm-hmm. In the past, we've highlighted things like the Black Lives Matter movement, which is ongoing and still requires support, to the constant attacks against trans and reproductive rights across the U.S., and the current crisis in Gaza. So what we ask is find a way that you can help, whether that's donating time or money, joining in protests safely where you can, watching streams that generate revenue for nonprofits, or even just beginning the steps to educate yourself on what's going on so you know how you can help. Find a way that you can do something. Find a way that you can be a hero out in the world. Let's try to make this place a better world.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll dive into our first topic, which is this week... The poster for the 48th Sentai, Bakuage Sentai Boom Boom Jir, was revealed, and we found out it will premiere on March 3rd, 2024, mm-hmm. And translations from TV Asahi, thanks to Burn Delta subs on Twitter for that, 2024's all-new Super Sentai series has a vehicle and creation motif, Bakuage Sentai Boom Boom Jir is born. Three heroes, red, blue, and pink, appear in the teaser visual, and the new Sentai heroes are explosively creative. They are the Bakuage Sentai Boom Boom Jir. The head writer for this one is Tomioka Atsuhiro, the lord of hobby anime, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Battle Spirits, Inazuma 11, etc., and will be directed by Nakazawa Shojiro, who did Sengaiger and Kamen Rider Geats as well. But let's open up the floor. What did we think of the teaser poster that we got that revealed red, blue, and pink's design?
I thought it ruled. I think the poster absolutely rips. I don't know how indicative it will be of like the tone of the show, because I think the tone of the poster is pretty different than what we're used to. But I'm particularly excited about what we know so far, just personally, for a number of reasons. As a kid... was like very into cars and still sort of like quietly am. I feel like this is a thing people don't necessarily know about me. So having that rock star on the poster was like so fucking cool.
That's fun. Yeah. I think that like it feels really throwbacky to me in a way. Yeah. Like it feels like Speed Racer. And my thing is like I don't usually like car theme Sentai stuff most of the time.
Me either.
Like even if I end up liking the season, like it's like I like the season in spite of the car theme. You know what I mean? What I like about this and what feels enticing to me is I think the thing that I usually don't like about car theme stuff is that I just find them like kind of boring or like just trying too hard to be cool or whatever. You know? I mean, I know like Car Ranger and you know I was obviously like meant to be silly on purpose, but like that's you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like usually it's like cars are sleek and cool, that's why we like them, or it's like oh, it's a car. Who fucking cares? What I like about
cars are sleek and cool, and that is why I like them.
Sure, I mean that's fine, but that's why I don't like. That's why I don't like that. It's just sort of like okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
what I like about about this is that it's like not very straightforward. It's clearly like meant to. It mean the vibe that it's giving off. At least who knows what it'll actually be like. But the vibe that it's giving off is very throwbacky, and it's like the suits aren't worried about being like sleek sports car design suits. They look like they're suits from like the 70s, and that's and that automatically feels very different to me, and that has me a lot more intrigued. And I feel like if it's going to be sort of like old school cars, that feels cooler than whatever the latest greatest car designs are, you know.
Well, and y'all both kind of hit upon something that I really kind of got from the poster itself, is it kind of gives me the thing that Shin Kamen Rider does as a movie, where it's set in like modern times, but it's all like very 70s inspired based off like the original series. Sure. And that's kind of the feel I get here, is like there's kind of a throwbacky feel. We'll see if that carries to the actual show.
I really hope it does.
I hope so. Yeah. I feel kind of different from what's happened in the last few years.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to see what they could do with that, and kind of like, you know, what fun things, like even just how they do shoot the fight scenes and all that kind of stuff. And with the director that's listed from like Zenkaiger and Kamen Rider Geats, there were really cool things there.
Yeah.
That were done in both of those shows.
And the head writer is like one of the other huge reasons I'm excited, because like that's the kind of shit I grew up with.
Yeah.
All those hobby anime.
Yeah. He's the one that wrote Bye Bye Butterfree.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Yep. He that's literally incredible. That's like his first episode of Pokemon that he did, and he's done like
one
all
and
the
done.
Other like
damn, he nailed it.
Well, he's done he's been on Pokemon for a long time though. Like he's done like multiple major episodes. I need to look through the list. But yeah, like but Bye Bye Butterfree was like the first one he did.
Yeah, it took him one try to make us all weep.
Yeah. So I who knows what that means for the show itself. But yeah, no, I agree with all of you. Like I actually really, because we got the suits leaked last week, and we were not going to talk about all that because that's a whole other thing. But, I think for me, like seeing them fully like in an official production shot, I actually do like them a lot, because they kind of evoke the idea of like a racing suit, not just a Sentai suit. And I think my favorite type of Sentai suit is when it's like it's supposed to be something. Like, you know, like you look at like the Kaku Ranger and they're supposed to be ninja outfits, or the Shinkenger and they're supposed to be like samurai garb. Or the Gokaiger pirate coats. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think one of the things I do hope for the design is that like the wheels on the helmet will actually spin, because I think that'd be a really cool like visual tick. I think that would be kind of fun.
I think it would be shocking if the wheel on the helmet and feet don't turn for at least like the final attack or something.
Yeah. Or at least like in the transformation sequence when like like the helmet appears and the wheel spins or something and locks in place. But also I just love the poster design, like the fact that it just says coming Boon in the corner like randomly. And I'm like, I know, I'm like, that's the kind of wordplay I live for. So I think it'll be interesting. I think it's gonna be I think with the directing team and the writing team, like especially because like they make the mention of like in the article, I think they said like he's the lord of hobby anime, and like highlights how like he's done that. So part of me is thinking like, okay, how merchandise heavy is this season gonna be? Like how many little cars are we gonna get in a toy line?
Don't say that. I don't want to buy a bunch of little cars.
That's every like recent season, especially with like different gimmicks. So I do think I'm the only one that's kind of cold on the suits. I don't like them. But that's a me thing. I just, there's a weird pattern with like the newest suits, is that they're all kind of weirdly baggy in ways. And I can point out something on the teaser poster that will kind of ruin it. At least it did for me a bit. Like there's just a, on Blue, you can see his underwear line, which I was like, we didn't cut that out, guys.
Yeah, these ones are like simultaneously like extremely tight and also extremely bunched in places. I don't mind it too much, because I feel like the King Oger ones are like far worse in that regard.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, no, so that's one of my problems with them.
An improvement at least. But I get you. I feel like I've seen plenty of folks who are like taking a while to warm up to them.
And like you said, Derek, like you made a great point, is like I with vehicle seasons, it tends to be against my will if I like them, because it's usually some other thing that raises them. So I'm like, I'm expecting like the villains to be probably cool or something, and like that'll be the thing that gets me the inroad to it. Or because we know there are two other Rangers, and we may have seen them somehow. Mm. we know there's two other Rangers, so if they like, maybe there will be something cool with those two and how they come into the team. And like, I always like really like when Sentai does like interesting dynamics like that. So hopefully we'll get to see something fun. And then this is how my brain works. I always like to try to think of like what their like sixth Ranger could look like. And I'm trying to imagine what the version of that would be. And the thing I've thought about is at least looking at red, blue, and mm-hmm. pink, they give me kind of pit crew vibes, like on a race car thing. Mm, so I would wonder if like, if like the sixth Ranger would be like the actual racer and look like a racer's uniform, like have like the like neck collar that like buttons over that kind of thing and has like more padding to him kind of thing. I could see that being a kind of fun gimmick thing that they do.
Maybe it's just Racer X.
Yeah.
Racer X, I love that. Yeah, honestly, if they just like do that, a version of that story.
But with this, like, that would actually be pretty cool.
Yeah. I also really like when there's really distinct symbols on Sentai suits. Like, the idea that it's, you know, even though it's a wheel, like, the spokes on the wheel is different for every character. But, like, I think that sometimes visors in Sentai suits can sometimes kind of all, you know, a little bit too similar for my liking. And I like that this is going in like the Zio O-Ranger direction where it's just like, no, there is a very distinct shape. If you're a kid, mm-hmm. you can practice drawing all of these shapes and that's signifying which Ranger that you're playing. And I love that stuff. Like, it's really simple, but that also feels a little bit throwbacky to me too, though. It's just like very specific iconography they're going for.
Yeah, at least they didn't make Pink's a heart. Sure, heart shape. Right. It's a matter.
I mean, you can also draw the shapes as an adult too, because I do that in any work meeting. Like, I have dozens of notebooks of like Zio symbols and other symbols, like just randomly drawn in. So
same. There's always some kind of Power Ranger that I've doodled in a corner. But any last thoughts on Boom Boonger before we head on?
I think the fact that we're almost to number 50 is insane.
Yeah.
It is wild. Like,
I'm very curious as to what they will do, because obviously Zenkaiger was 45, and it had a lot of different ways that it was a love letter to the series, and so I'm very curious to see what 50 is going to be.
If I'm being real, I'm kind of burnt out on the, like, we're doing another anniversary season, so, like, I don't know that I could do another one, because I keep trying to capture that Gokaiger energy, and it's like, every time, guys, it gets less potent.
maybe 50 will just be Gokaiger season 2.
I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. With that said, we'll kind of move on to the episodes that we're talking about today, with the first one of Power Rangers Cosmic Fury. We'll start with Season 30, Episode 6, Takeoff, which is a teleplay by Maya Thompson and Alwyn Dale, with a story by Becca Barnes, Alwyn Dale, Maya Thompson, and Cameron Dixon, and directed by Charlie Haskell. And the short description for this one is, Solon goes missing right as the Rangers prepare to fly the base back to Earth, but the team has bigger problems. Ollie's tracker has led him to Eridus. Dun, dun, dun. So, we've been doing kind of like a loosey-goosey version of like talking about the episodes. Less going like plot by beat, because there are other podcasts that do that better than us. So we just kind of go vibes-based. So sure. Is there anything that sticks out to you guys that you really enjoyed from this like first episode?
Oh, boy.
There's so much.
There is so much.
The thing about Cosmic Fury, I think, that is fascinating about it is just like how fast paced it is, and like so much. It kind of is mind boggling sometimes how much they pack into like 22 minutes. You know, even you know, we, Doug and I, like cover children's cartoons that are 22 minutes long all the time. And even with that context, sometimes watching episodes of Cosmic Fury, it's just sort of like the show moves. Like, it's pretty wild. So
and if you compare it to like other Power Ranger seasons, like if like I listen to a bunch of the like review shows that are out there, like Ranger Danger and Morphin Grid, and they talk about the idea of like 22 minutes can be any length of time. because it can be really short or really long depending on it, even within Power Rangers.
Well, and I think too, it also like is the, I think what contributes to it too is that this is like the first Power Ranger season that was written for the streaming model in mind. So like, it's designed to be binged, and they know they can like pad it out, and like, or not pad it out, but like they can like cram it in. So I think that's part of it too.
I mean, also, they had half the episode order that they normally had, so
yeah,
that also changes things.
It all makes sense, but it is still interesting to see it on screen and definitely makes this season so distinct from
what
the show has, like, always been historically. Like, personally, I wish it was at least 20 episodes, because I would have loved to see more of these characters in with these powers and in this story. Honestly, I think the story could have fit at least a 20 episode season, if not more, to be honest.
There's
plenty of room that they could have played around in some of these spaces and let some of these stories go on for even longer. I think, you know, Fern becoming the Orange Ranger could have been a two-parter, and that would I would have lived for it. But
yes,
but I like what we end up getting with it.
Because
Fern becomes a ranger, like, hell yeah.
Yes. I mean that's the big thing this episode, obviously. Yeah, I kind of, to your point, Derek, a thing, like, I wish we had had more time, because, like, Fern deserves to get the Six Ranger first battle moment.
Yeah,
and she gets it a little bit here. But, like, she deserves to, like, have, like, some huge thing where she takes out, like, 50 foot soldiers by herself and, like, saves the team. So this is kind of like Fern's big episode. They've been building her up over the season. You know, one thing that I didn't catch, but like in my first watch through, that I thought was kind of a funny line that they have going between Fern and Izzy, like, that before it leads to her ranger being a ranger. Because obviously they've been building this idea that Izzy is very scared that Fern's going to get hurt. Izzy's very protective, keeps Fern in the ship at all times. And there's this great exchange that they kind of reference in when the rangers are all running out, and Fern's like, "Well, I can help." And Izzy's like, "No, you're staying here. You're not leaving." And Fern goes, "Okay, indoor cat again." And I'm like, poor baby. And there's a cute, they reference it later with like Fern and Izzy make up, where Izzy's like, "Oh, you're not an indoor cat, or neither one of us are indoor cats." So I was like, okay.
I think it's also like the way Jacqueline delivers that line in particular. Like, she has a really good job of like using that subtlety of like giving you the little gut punch too, which makes that like a fun line in general.
I think it's also a pretty, this episode is pretty smartly written, I think, because they do a nice job with the team being split up, and so the sort of flow of information, I think, changes how people act. Like, you have Zato and Izzy, they don't immediately teleport in to rescue Solon and say why they don't, because there's a lot of worms in there and they'll attack them. It'll be dangerous, easy to go slower. Fern doesn't hear that. So then she does teleport in because she doesn't know that information. And then all those worms do attack. And that's what leads to her becoming the Orange Ranger, is the whole, those confluence of events. And I think that there's plenty of seasons of Power Rangers that I think don't necessarily think through some of their, plot beats as well. And I think the season as a whole is very good at the attention to detail, and given the complexity of what's going on, like making sure everything that everyone's doing at every given time makes sense. And this one, like, it's very simple and straightforward, but like the only reason any of this happens is because Fern has just been left out of the action and the planning and the communication. And that puts her in a position where, you know, things go wrong, but then they end up going right in the end.
Yeah,
I mean, and so speaking of her saving, like, the moment, because obviously Solon is the one that gets missing, and she goes in and saves her, I do love the fact that they tied Solon and Fern together so closely, and even so much, like, her powers are based on her.
Yeah,
I was like, that is a really cool way in, smart, because I think we all knew from rumors and other things that there was going to be another ranger, and, like, obviously if Fern is part of the cast now, it makes sense that, hey, she's going to be a ranger, but I am kind of happy that, like, we didn't know the how and the why, so when I got here, I was like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have dinosaur powers, and they literally have a dinosaur friend that is a dinosaur that could inspire a dinosaur power. Like, why not use that, you know? Like, but I never would have thought that they would have gone there. Yeah, so that's so fun.
Well, and Solon's always been the heart of the team, too. So, like, it definitely, like, even gives that extra layer of, like, aw. Like, because she's been so integral to it since day one.
Yeah. And I am a little sad that she gets just a flash morph, which, like, I understand why that's, like, the Power Ranger thing. When you first get your powers, it just kind of flies on. But I wish she would have gotten, like, her own, like, triumphant moment of doing the morphing call and doing it by herself, because that's always fun for me.
I guess she never really gets to do that, because she's always doing a group morph after this, isn't she? Yeah.
Yeah,
because I think It's interesting because she is a Sixth Ranger in a sense, but she also, yeah. I don't think they're viewing her that way. And I don't think for any sort of terrible reason. I think it's more just like she's another member of the team. So they aren't doing like a lot of those Sixth Ranger things that I feel like a lot of us would have been excited to see to get like her get to do.
It's the weird structure of this season, which I like how weird all is, where like they never have a full team till the very end. And even then, like, you know, by the time they have a full team, like it's after Zato's gone. So like there's never a point when all seven Rangers are really together, which I think is a wild swing that they take. But like having Ollie being gone. Yeah, I do too. Like having Ollie being gone and then kind of having two Sixth Rangers and like Ion being their carryover Sixth Ranger and Zato kind of becoming a Sixth Ranger. It's like, yeah, there's not really any. Fern just sort of just fills the gap that's been missing by the reshuffling of everyone's roles.
So Zato, or not Zato, Ion basically ends up just like not being demoted from Sixth Ranger to quote regular Ranger, but like kind of like he's kind of just like a regular teammate on this one who does things and looks similarly to everyone else. So it the reshuffling had like some weird sort of implications, but I like it storytelling wise. I like all the sort of things they're able to build that way, especially because they didn't really have to. It's not like they're working around the confines of footage.
Aside from Zords, but we can we can talk about that in a little bit. I just gotta have my one little thing. I'll say in a minute. Before we jump off Fern, I do want to talk about her weapon. What do we think of that?
I think it's cool.
Like a claw staff thing? Yeah. I think it's neat. And it's like Solon's claws, I think she said.
Yeah.
Like that. That's fun. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And it turns into... I don't remember. Maybe I'm spoiling it. There's a point when it turns into like nunchucks.
It's the next episode.
It's the next episode.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, not a huge spoiler. I mean, my biggest problem with it is that I don't love the way they designed it, because it just looks like... in my head, it looks like a plastic rake that you get when you go to the beach, like as a toddler. And that's kind of the vibe. It just looks really flimsy. And that's a Power Ranger problem. That's not this weapon's problem.
Yeah. Sure.
But I was like, if it was longer, maybe a little bigger, it maybe wouldn't look as like... and when it does go into nunchuck mode, the chain that they put on it, like, I get it. They probably had a small budget to work on, but I was like, that chain... is gonna snap in like 2 seconds.
It could have been like a Power Lance size more than it is. I get that.
If it were just the staff, I think I would totally want it to be Power Lance like long. But I love a weapon you can use two ways, and I think it would have been probably sort of silly if. Although I guess. I mean, Billy's transforms and his is pretty long. Whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I have mixed feelings on that.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Did want to kind of talk about, so like one of the big things that gets seeded here and really does play into the next episode revolves around Zato and the Morphin Master Staff, because we get to see him start to tap into it, starting to use it. And I love, you know, Derek, you kind of talked about how like things get truncated and don't get expanded on. I do think like Zato's storyline is one that I wish like in a 20 episode season we would have gotten like a longer, like really cool thing with him.
Absolutely.
It kind of gets kind of rushed in all this, but I do love getting to see him when he does get to use the staff and just what it does, because it's a different thing that we don't see, especially with these Rangers, because they're usually either using weapons or they have like armor last season they would call on. So someone who's just like wielding magic left and right is really fun.
Yeah, I mean, he's literally like a space. He's like a Jedi, basically. Like, he's a space wizard. He's very monk-like in this season, which I think is an interesting choice. And I actually think... I think that's something that Russell Curry plays really well. So I think it was a smart choice to do that with him. Like, if they're going to have your kind of like Jesus-y figure where he like dies and resurrected and saves everyone, like going in the monk direction and like playing him more like a Jedi or something, I think is really, it's really cool. And I don't know that we've really seen anything like that on Power Rangers. We've had like very kind of similar variations or mentors that are sort of like that.
Yeah.
But like for a Power Ranger, just being like this kind of like, chill, like, yeah, I was dead and I'm not anymore and I've got to use magic to save people and I'm okay with that, like that's such an interesting vibe to be going with. I agree with you. I wish we'd seen a little bit more of it, because we don't really see him enough this season in general, I feel like. But I like the idea.
Yeah, and I do want to call out with the like Izzy and Zato together, because obviously they get ambushed by Ollie, they get a great morph, because I actually really, people complain about the Dino Fury and Cosmic Fury morphs being too long. I I like what they did this episode with it, where they flip the they flip it up in the air, start to fight, and then it drops and they do the Link to Morphin Grid. Yeah. I'm like, yes, this is what you can do when you have something like this. And I wish they would have kind of maybe found other ways in other episodes to play with that. But I really liked that with them.
I love this morph so much.
I love a morph that exists sort of in the real world. I know that most of the time it's necessary for it not to, because there's a sequence and you need all the posing and cool graphics. And I like that stuff, but I love one that exists in the real world. Like, if you've seen Tokuger, theirs exists in the real world, and they make such a meal of that. And every time, it never gets old to me. It's so funny to me. So I love, I don't expect that they're going to do anything, you know, especially fun with this one. This was fun. I don't think they're going to make a joke of it like Tokuger does.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I really like what they're doing.
Yeah. I love the CGI flip. I don't know why I do. When it just, it's like it spins on their finger, they knock it up the air, and I'm like, okay, this is just fun. Guys, if you don't like this, like, I understand, but this is fun.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you spoke about the writing of it, Derek. And one thing I've really loved, like, this season is, like, the banter. Because I think they understand all of these characters so well. And there's, like, the great moment when Izzy and Zato are getting beaten down. And the other team shows up and they're like, well, did y'all need help? And Izzy's like, no, me and Zato had this. And Zato's like, oh, totally. Yeah, we definitely did.
It's so good. They write these characters so well. Also, I just realized, are you going through this trying to be very spoiler free? Because I just realized I spoiled something very, like, kind of big for the ending.
No, look, that's the problem with talking about it the way we do after having seen it all. It's hard not to. So, it doesn't matter. If they caught it, they caught it. If they didn't, they didn't.
Yeah.
So.
Have you seen it all, Doug? Did you actually watch the whole thing? Did you finish?
No, but I can't avoid. Okay. I mean, I can't avoid people talking about it online. So,
you've only seen up through what we're talking about.
Yep.
These two episodes.
Yep.
Wow.
Okay. Nice.
This is the first time I'm watching it. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So, let's talk about the Zords real quick, if we can.
Sure.
What do y'all think of the way Zords are used this season? Because there's kind of a unique feature with them coming up, you know, in episode one or two, they go, oh, they can be remote controlled, that kind of thing. What is kind of y'all's thoughts on this?
I think it was a tough situation they were sort of in, because the way that Q Ranger Zord, I haven't seen Q Ranger, but like just how many there are and how many Rangers there are.
Yeah.
And the way that they were writing this season in particular, for there not to be Rangers in any particular combination at any given time, I think it was a clever way to establish how these Zords are unique, so that they could have any Ranger in any Zord at in any combination at any time. Like, how else do you have Billy in the Zord, you know?
And then you get Billy in the Blue Wolf Sword for a couple times. Like, that's, you know, and that's just fun.
I think it's
a fine workaround, because it's sort of like, I, as much as I love color coding, like, there's no reason that you have to have every Ranger in every color. Even in past seasons and other seasons, you know, I mean, you watch Wild Force and it's sort of like, I'm a white Ranger with my green Zord or something. Like, it doesn't really matter that much. And I think they work around it just fine. And I think that, like, if you have to minimize the use in something because of how short the season is, I'm glad that they minimize the use of the Zord, because as cool as that stuff is, there's not really a lot of story in Zord stuff. So it's like, you get them for your fun action sequences and to cut down your budget a little bit with the footage you've already got. And I think they use them for good story workarounds sometimes, like the idea of like a Zord shield around Earth and stuff like that. Like all of that stuff is fun. And then it also gives you moments, like I said, of like Billy piloting another Blue Wolf Zord, of like men piloting a pink Zord and no one being weird about it. Like Javi pilots the pink, I don't remember what they call it. Phoenix, Eagle, whatever. The pink bird Zord, like multiple times. And no one's like, I don't even like pink. Like no one cares about that. Like, it's just another Zord that is just glowing pink. Like, I love that stuff. And that's, I don't know. It's something, it's like a very minor thing, but like of the many, like, sort of forward thinking things this season in particular does. I think that is one of them. Having men use pink powers rules. Love it. Been waiting for that to happen in some capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My only problem I've had with it, support, like, I agree with what both of y'all have said. My only issue I've had is, so in this episode, it happens. There's a point where they're forming the Megazord and they get them all out. And Javi is in Izzy's sword, even though his, technically his color Zord, because I know you mentioned, Derek, you're like, I don't mind the color shakeups. I unfortunately do. My brain's like, hold on, that Black Ranger should not be in the green sword. He should be in the black sword. That is there, and you could have done it. It's fine. It's cool. It's just my personal, I've complained about it on other episodes, but it's just a thing that bothers me. And I was like, but his sword is there, guys. He could be in his. He doesn't have to take Izzy's sword.
Yeah.
Leave.
Well,
I wish they would have referenced it or something too, if it, or had a joke of Izzy being like, hey, why my sword? Would have been fun.
Yeah. I mean, in the wise words of a famed mentor from Power Rangers, there's a funny explanation for that.
Yeah. Yeah. As always.
So, simple explanation for that.
Exactly. I do like the banter they have in the Zords too, to go back to kind of thing. I highlighted one early in the episode when they're doing the Cosmic Dragon Zord and Javi's in the Bear Zord. And he's like, oh, here comes Papa Bear. And I was like, oh, Javi. Oh,
He likes to make a lot of puns. And that's, I think that's why he's so endearing. But I do want to touch base real quick too and just highlight two moments in particular. I love how we can tell this was written like pre or post pandemic because of the monster name in this episode for the hunter.
Wait, what's the monster name?
Joe Exotic.
Oh, Joe Exotic. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I did
God.
Wonder about that, actually.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, I didn't get that.
You didn't get that? Yeah.
Wow. I didn't watch Tiger King, so I
didn't
I don't...
either.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Like that could not have been a coincidence. The way the words are combined, like, come on. I want to give a shout out to that because I just thought it was funny. But also, like, I love the scene at the end of the episode when Ollie is fighting the Scuttle Worms as well, and then like he does like the turnaround and like blasts through it, and you see him through the hole that he's in the monster. And
yes.
He's like, I hate this planet. I just what a good, well done shot. I just enjoy that because we would not have gotten that on Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, so I wanted to speak about Ollie in general. Yeah. I've said it on previous episodes. I think this is one of the best evil ranger arcs in the entire show. Like, it's one of the best. Mm-hmm. I would say it's even better than the Green Ranger because Tommy was only evil for like a couple episodes.
I think it's fast. I think it's really smart. I think that they did a smart thing because it's like, when you break it down, like every single character this season gets something like to do. Like, even in the short 10 episodes where there's not a lot of time, a lot going on, every single character, they have a very clear, like, this is what this person's thing is. And sometimes it's related to another character, sometimes it isn't. And I think, so the idea of just like taking one ranger out of the team and just making them evil, Ollie's already been evil before in the previous season. So picking up that thread and doing it for a full season, very smart, especially if you have another full-time Blue Ranger on the cast filling his role, and then the next episode gets another Blue Ranger guest starring. Like, there's plenty of blue to be had around, so like, and it's very smart. You get a new evil ranger outfit out of it, and he's good at playing it. So,
and having the sort of new evil ranger general of the evil side be the boyfriend of the new Red Ranger, I think is a really fantastic additional benefit to that. I don't think it's by any stretch the reason, but I do think it's a great benefit for the dynamic.
Only helps.
And there's great stuff like with the, like, again, with banter between Ollie and the Rangers, because every time Ollie shows up, it's like on site for most of them, especially Izzy, who is always like trying to piss Ollie off in some way.
She had like the great line of the episode where like Ollie is like, do you like how we tracked you? And like, he explains how they got there, and she's like, blah 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 exposition.
Undercutting him in such a wonderful way.
So good.
Is
so
she
good.
Also the one who refers to him as Amelia's ex? Oh, your ex
is
here.
Yeah. Yes, she does. Izzy does not like Ollie at this point. It's so good.
Well, I think it speaks to like the chemistry that this cast shares of each other, like, because they all genuinely like each other too, and like you can tell in all the behind the scenes stuff. So like,
I think
it just shines through so well, and so especially like the play of like having one of them now be evil and like how they can react to that, I think really gives them an extra fun thing to do.
Absolutely.
And I do love that, like, one of the frustrations that Ollie has to deal with is, as an evil general, he just gets a bunch of crappy people working for him at all times.
Mm-hmm. He gets the full villain experience.
Yeah, he's so good at like playing like flustered and frustrated.
Especially because somewhere in there, he knows what being on a competent team is like. Like yes, he comments yes. on that, like where he's like, "We are a team. Why is this not working?"
Yeah. My number one favorite thing to do with Ollie. This is like kind of a spoiler, but not really. It's like an out of. It's not from the story, so I apologize, yeah. Doug. But
you
it's
can
not
say
a big
whatever.
Deal. But like when obviously he will eventually become good again. That's not a surprise. What I love about it, this season has such cool, unique things with like the evolving credits. Like almost every other episode, the credits change. And like once Ollie becomes good, it's not just they like, you know, that he's no longer the Dark Ranger or whatever, but like his like sort of like neutral face turn and like turn on the credits when his name comes up changes to a smile. Like he gets to smile in his like opening credit shot once he turns good. Yeah. And it's such a small little detail, but it's like, and which half people watching like wouldn't even notice probably, but like I love that like it's like a signal of like, nah, he's gonna be part of the team again now that he's good. I love that. I love that so much.
And
I do want to talk about like a fun thing that we get here and we've had in kind of previous episodes is the relationship with Lord Zedd and Ollie, because there's a fun like mentor kind of dynamic that's going on here as Lord Zedd plays Daddy or Zaddy, whichever your preferred term for that is. And it's got like kind of almost like a kind of like Sith apprentice kind of thing where like Lord Zedd's like, look, you failed, but here. It's not a complete failure. Or like in previous episodes, like when you brought up like the thing about team dynamics, where Ollie's like, "Oh, we should have fought a team," and Zedd's like, "You're thinking like a ranger, and that's the problem. Like you need to be concerned about yourself." And there's this fun kind of like mentoring of Ollie as he becomes more evil that I really do love.
Yeah, it's fun that they have a legitimate relationship. It is so fascinating and like a fun thing to do, because you know Zedd obviously isn't the most complex villain ever made. So like it gives him it gives Zedd a little bit more complexity by having like a son figure, which we've never seen. We've never seen him have that with any character before. Like that's really cool.
It would have been so easy to go to the Well of Lords that just yells at everyone all the time, because that's season two and season three of the show. Right, like that's what it is. Like so easy, but I think it speaks to doing something different in having him kind of be like, look, you failed, but you know, here's what we can do.
It's just fun having like these Kingdom Hearts-esque moments.
Yes, it is very Kingdom Hearts. I do want to talk about kind of a thing we've not talked about because we haven't really discussed what's going on in the episode. The big thing about this episode is getting the Cosmic Cruiser up and running. And so we get to see a lot of the cockpit set that they've built for it, which I love, is one of the coolest things they've added to this whole base and expanding it into a ship. And you tweeted about this, Derek, yesterday. Only ladies and gays can enter the cockpit for the Cosmic Cruiser.
It's so much. It's so fun. I mean, it's, you know, it's what happens when you can have like a female Red, when you've got like three ladies on the same team, like it's, you get to fill up, you get to fill up a cockpit and only the gays and the girls. I love it.
You know what's interesting though? Like, I think this creative team would have done that no matter what. But if you think about the combination of what people were doing in this episode, it kind of only made sense for those four characters to be in there based on... Yeah. Like, who was doing what and who needed to keep an eye on whom and who was already working. Like, it actually was, like, perfectly natural.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what all their roles are and everything.
Yeah, that makes it was really cool. And I think that's, like, one of the things in general that this creative team does so well. I mean, I think it's been status quo now for a couple years, and I think is easy to sort of just, I hate to say take for granted, but I think that's part of it. Like, it still hits me sometimes that Fern and Izzy are on screen all the time as girlfriends, like, in a relationship.
Yeah.
Like, it still hits me every once in a while. I'm like, holy shit. Like,
And they can talk about it, too. Yeah. It's not like one of those things where it's, like, in the background. Like, you know, you have the cutesy joke of Javi being like, hey, well, since you're both Power Rangers, does that make you a power couple kind of thing? Like it's
those moments that really hit me.
They're honestly more overt about being a couple than like most of the straight Power Ranger couples that have ever existed.
Yes.
You mean like in Dimensions in Danger when Tommy and Kat held hands for like 5 seconds
briefly?
And that
was it?
As a married couple, no less. And that's a thing that hits, and I completely agree, Doug. It's great every time it gets to happen. And, like, there's also, they get to have an emotional arc. Because, again, just to kind of tie back with this, the big thing with Izzy being emotional with Fern, because she understands, like, how she acted. Like, she realizes, mm-hmm. like, oh, I boxed you in, and I wouldn't want that done to me, so I should not have done that to you.
Yeah.
It's a real quick wrap-up to that arc. Like, again, if this was, like, 20 episodes, I'm sure they would have teased this out sure. a lot longer. But I do like that moment, especially because it's, like, Izzy really, like, getting to see Fern and be like, okay, I see you. I understand what I was doing wrong.
Yeah, and based on, like, previous episodes with them, you know that that's not just a thing that they're doing for this episode. Like, their relationship yeah. is stronger for it because they've had episodes where things one says in one episode come up in another episode, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, it cannot be overstated because I think we do take it for granted at this point. But, like, there are two queer women in a relationship that are both Power Rangers on the same team. And it's not like a temporary one episode thing either. Mm-hmm. Like, they're permanent mm-hmm. Power Rangers on the same team. Like, I truly never thought I'd ever see that happen. Ever thought right. that yeah. I'd ever see that happen. And to see it yeah. happen is just so beautiful and so... so cool that we finally got that. Yeah. Like, even if it's happening, it's the episode where it happens. Yeah. You know, and even if this ends up being the last season of Power Rangers ever, which I'm sure it won't be, it'll be back at some point. But
yeah.
like,
yeah.
even if it is, I'm so glad that we got to have this before it wrapped up. Like, what for a sure. gift, what a gift to get it, even if it was at the last second, you know?
Also, question, I'm not caught up on comics, so I don't know if there's another Orange Ranger I'm not thinking about. I know there's one in there, but are all of our Orange Power Rangers lesbians so far?
No, there's technically Skull's an Orange
Ranger.
Oh,
that's right,
no.
that's right.
They're...
But is he though?
But is Skull a lesbian?
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you count Kat as an Orange Ranger, definitely a lesbian.
Oh, yes.
And I mean, Boom. There's, I think he's sort of lesbian adjacent, right?
Like, yeah.
I mean, then we've got Ari's girlfriend, who is the Orange Solar Ranger. Right. So
yeah,
that's the other lesbian. She and Fern were the two I was thinking of. But yeah. thank you for the reminder of all the other lesbians.
Right. Yes. But I mean, many lesbians. They're all like, you know, weird, like temporary or fake right. rangers, you know? So it's like actually getting like another two, the two most full time rangers, and really only one of them is truly a full time ranger, both lesbians. I love that.
That.
Orange is on the lesbian. Color. Yeah, it's on the lesbian mm-hmm. flag.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Oh my God. That is kind of amazing. But before we wrap up this episode, we do get one tease that gets played out in the next episode, because we get to see a certain returning cast member in Heckle. I loved how they I was spoiled going into Cosmic Fury that this character was returning, because we knew there was rumors about the suit being there, et cetera, et cetera. People had seen it in footage. But I love how this whole subplot is introduced, not just in this episode, but in a previous episode, mm-hmm. and then it's just been teased up until we get the payoff in the next episode. And it's just nice getting to see Ryan back as Heckle, because he's so sweet.
He has so much fun in this too. Like, yeah. I love that they don't, because there's not a lot of time, they can't really make a huge thing of it, but ends up sort of working, because it's sort of like, who cares about the backstory? Like, you remember me from past season? I'm a ranger now. It's cool. It's fine. I do some cool stuff. Now it's done. Like, that's all we need. And it works for me. Cause I think, you know, sometimes I think, team up stuff can get a little bit either bogged down with exposition, or they explain so little that it's just sort of annoying. Yeah. And this one, I feel like it hits the right balance. Like, there's a very particular good reason for Heckle to be there. They don't over explain it. It's the right, it's a character that makes sense to be in the situation he's in. He was a former major villain who's reformed, and perfect guy to be a spy. Right. So like, he puts the spy in Spinosaurus. Like, I love that. Like, it all makes sense story wise. And it, you know, it's a fan servicey thing to finally see the Dark Ranger in person in this. But they don't like overdo it either. He doesn't overstay his welcome either. I like that. I think they did it. They executed it great.
It's one of the things I have been loving about this season, and one of the reasons I do also wish it were longer, because it's basically doing, like, kind of the Hyperforce guest thing, but on the actual show. Yeah. Where it's like, we have this guest and they're down. So like, here's our quick explanation as to why they're here. And they'll be here for, you know, as long as they need to be, and then deuces. Like, I think it's nice, and it creates fun combinations of characters you wouldn't otherwise expect.
Yep. And I do just want to, because we have transitioned to episode 7, Operation Seasoning, which was a teleplay by Alwyn Dale, Steve McCleary, and Cameron Dixon, written by Becca Barnes, Alwyn Dale, Maya Thompson, Cameron Dixon, and Steve McCleary, and directed by Charlie Haskell, who I do want to call out real quick, has been filming or directing the show for literal decades, since the Mighty Morphin era, I believe, or Zeo era. Wow. So wild that he got to finish it out. Cool. And the quick description for this one is, to save Pine Ridge, Team Cosmic Fury must dismantle the system of Squidrills, creating an anti-Zord force field around Earth with the help of a spy. And so, since we kind of dived in, I agree, Derek, I love how they introduce Heckle in this episode, like, as far as, like, him revealing what he's doing, and then it is just a thing, he's like, oh yeah, I morph. I love, he even, like, has that after a redemption arc, he's like, I turned good.
It's like, redemption arc.
Like, you can tell how excited Ryan is to be there in this episode, because it feels different than when he was on Dino Charge, and like, in a good way though, like, it's because he was good on Dino Charge as well, but like, it, you can tell he is like chewing the scenery, he's hamming it up, like he is like having fun, like he is like genuinely excited to be there.
I think he loves playing this character. Like, he lives the he lives the fantasy.
And you can tell, I feel like sometimes you can tell when an actor is doing their morphing sequence because they're acting and doing a morphing sequence, and you can tell when they're like excited to be doing a Power Rangers morphing sequence. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you get it that he is very excited to be holding up that cool ass boomerang, you know?
Yeah. Well, and like, it's especially, I think, kind of like really nice with him, because, you know, the suit didn't get used in Dino Charge for whatever reason, blah blah blah. But like, it got introduced in the comics, and I remember when they revealed it, it was at Power Morphicon, and I think he was in the audience when they revealed it and didn't know, and it was like super emotional that he gets to be a Ranger, even if it was in comics, and to get to this point now where he gets to be it on screen as well is just so great. I love what they do with Heckle as he's like wooing Squillia, and I've loved everything where he's like, you know, oh, we can get you goggles, we can do all these things, and like, you know, he keeps trying to like get her to leave and all this stuff, and when they don't, he's like, oh fine, you know, I'm gonna do this the hard way then, I'm gonna take you out.
What I love about it is it's like, this is the kind of like hero behavior that only someone who used to be a villain would really be able to pull off or be comfortable with, right? Like, Zato's not going to successfully do this. There's just no way. But Heckle could, you know?
It's the equivalent of like when Astronomer went back, or when Corone went back to Onyx as Astronomer.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I love it. It's so fun.
God, I would love to have those two in a room together.
Right?
I mean, also, like, the pansexual energy would just be off the charts. Oh, yeah. Like,
out of control.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Too much pan energy.
Too much pan energy is dangerous.
Right.
Exactly.
I don't care if too much pan energy is dangerous.
I did love, like, so Squillia is a character that I think could easily be just obnoxious the whole time. I do love the stupid little things they put in her dialogue this episode.
Especially
when she's like fighting Heckle, and she like, you know, she's like, if that's your communicator, ditch the group chat. And then she's like, your little collab is donezo. Like, I'm like, okay, this character is ridiculous, and I kind of
love
her.
How hard they go on it. Here's the thing, this is what I'm choosing to take as intentional, even though I'm sure it was not. I'm sure it was just like fun, broad strokes characterization. But I love that like two of the most major villains in the final season of Power Rangers is like a billionaire hyper capitalist and like a vapid content creator who just uses Power Rangers for their own like personal gain through their content creation. Interesting that maybe those are the two greatest villains in Power Rangers fandom. But like, think that I just love that. I think it's really fun. And they do have a lot of fun with her. Like, I know people in the past have sort of ragged on these seasons for like their millennial speak or whatever. But I think that it's like, if you're going to do it, go hard on it. And this character is supposed to be an obnoxious villain and that everyone complains about how annoying she is. So of course she's going to talk like that.
Do people forget about Ninja Storm, or do they have the same critique? Capri and Mera. It's so a very similar situation, you know?
Yeah. I think I just also love the fact that in her design, she uses a selfie stick as her weapon.
You put it out, Derek.
I mean, they're not, I think, being subtle in the who they're aiming at with their sights, because come on now, they're letting out a little bit of frustration about what they have to deal with a billionaire corporation breathing down their neck. It's not subtle, I don't think. I do want to talk about before we get to the thing that we want to talk about, let's talk about Ion and Zeto this episode. This is kind of, I think, the big emotional kind of peak, the beginning, of the emotional peak with Ion and Zeto, because it's, we've been getting teases of Zeto uses a staff. Oh, it's weird. It seems to drain him. And Ion was there for the tree being hey, enjoy the time you've got. And Ion being why did it say it that way? And I like this episode because the way they play Zeto is obviously he's being cagey about what he reveals. But there is the moment where at different points in this episode where Ion and Solon are hey, just tell us. Stop hiding it from us. Yeah. Stop trying to protect us. Tell us what's going on.
Communicate. Yeah. Tell us what you're going through. But tell us if we're making it worse or if we can help.
Yeah, I like that aspect of it, but I really liked a lot is that, this type of storyline is not uncommon where it's someone has a secret about themselves and they're refusing to share it with their friends who could help, and that's only hurting them. Super common, that's all obviously.
CW shows.
Right. But what I like about this is that I do think it makes sense for Zeto to not want to share it, because it's not so much that it's sort of there's a little bit of it where it's sort of I don't want to put this burden on my friends. That's definitely a major part of it. But I think it's also the dude just seems he's kind of already has been at peace at what happened. I'm sure he doesn't want to die. And I think he sort of says as much throughout this season. But for the most part, it's sort of he's been dead before. He knows that he got magically brought back to life for a reason. And he's just I'm here to fulfill the reason that I'm back. Whatever else happens doesn't really matter. And I'm at peace with that. The only problem right now really is that no one else is going to be at peace with that. So why am I going to tell them and upset them if I already know what's going on?
And logistically, and I think he touches on this a little bit, it would be a problem. It's not solely to protect their feelings. It's you will all start to be protecting me, and that is not what we need to be doing. We have to focus on what's going on, and if you're all worried about what's going on with me, then you're not focused, you know?
It's also a really good play for them to have it be Solon and Ion to be the ones to confront him about it, because they've lost him not only once, but they've lost him a second time.
And I think, Derek, you talked about how, they're playing it with Zeto and how, he's going, one direction really hard. I like that Ion's kind of playing the opposite direction, where he's, so desperate to try to keep Zeto here because he does not want to lose him. And, Jordan gets to play this very, frantic energy as Ion, being like, what is going on? I cannot lose you again. You have to stay here. And while I do understand Zeto's reasoning for being hey, don't tell the others, I don't want it to be a burden on them, he kind of put the burden of it on Ion now, because Ion has to keep it. It's hey, maybe don't put that on him.
It's not a solution. Read him a book. So he was never going to be able to keep the secret. You know what I mean? He was never going to be able to keep it from anybody. I really enjoy Ion in this episode. He's not my favorite character on the cast. I think Jordan's great, but Ion is very hit or miss for me. But in this episode, he's so good. And I feel like the energy he typically brings to comedy or curiosity or whatever is so perfectly placed here instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Jordan, I because I agree with you. I think Ion, it's sort of I like the idea of his character, but I think he could be it was a little hit or miss. And I think that Jordan feels like a better actor this season, and it might be because of the material they're giving him, but it really feels like I'm watching him this season versus watching him in the previous season, like, it feels like he has elevated his abilities mm-hmm. so much. Like, and in these, like, he, I think he's like really good. I think he's honestly better in these sort of smaller moments than he is in like the bigger comedy that they've done with him before. Like, mm-hmm. I think he is really good when he's just sort of like, I care about my friend and I don't want him to die. Yeah. And then just sort of underplaying yeah. that. I think yeah. he's really, really effective at that stuff. Yeah. And they're kind of playing more to his strengths now.
Yeah. I think there's a world where he's cast as like a very sort of like heart of the team type of ranger instead yeah. and would have mm-hmm. fucking knocked it out of the park, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think we get it here, but we also kind of got it in like Dino Fury whenever they talk about what happened on their planet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I think like when they played that kind of, I think it's when they hone in Ion on like the emotional side of things, it does great. It's when they like have to do the wacky character stuff. Yeah. And, like, it kind of goes off the rails. Mm-hmm. It would have been great to get more of that, but I think what we have here is so good. And I love that. Like, again, you know, read it however you want to read it. You know, you can read it as they're just friends, or you can read it as something really deep. These are two characters that have been alive for thousands of years and experienced a ton of stuff together. It's just really interesting to have this emotional moment. Because, again, I think in other Power Rangers seasons, it would have been just Zato keeps the secret, and it would have been very surface level. There's just yeah. something great about mm-hmm. well, the yeah. emotional depth to it.
And you don't see this type of emotional depth between two male characters on Power Rangers often.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
oh, true. No, yeah.
Like, done to this level. I mean, obviously, we've had, yeah. like, you know, Max and Danny from Wild Force. They were super close, but, like, that was more, like, cheesy and, like,
play for comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, like, cuts to a particular place. Like, because you would get moments with Tommy and Jason, but they were these, like, macho bro moments. Like, they were, yeah. Yeah. They were predator, real and they were predator. Emotional, but they were still clothed in, like, yeah. masculinity and machismo, yeah. you know?
Or they tried to do a little bit of that with, like, Andros and Zane sometimes. Yeah. Like, I think that was built into their backstory, yeah. but then it was sort of like,
yeah.
but they're now both jealous because aloof, we like
the
same
girl. They are. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. 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 So.
So there's no, like, pretense with these two, which I think is really the big thing. They don't have to, like, like, couch it in anything else. They just are really good friends who were comfortable talking yeah. to each other yeah. and being emotional with each other.
Yeah, and I think, too, it also, like, going back to earlier, like, it's the chemistry that the actors all have with each other. Like, they just...
Yeah.
Like, I will say it, I've said it before, I'll say it again, this is one of the best, if not the absolute best casts of the show. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Really good. I think by kind yeah. of a... Maybe kind of a wide margin, to be honest.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah I mean...
yeah.
I mean, there's some, like, competitors, yeah, I would say, like, the Dino Charge cast. There's some competitors in there. But, yeah, I mean, if you compare it to other seasons, there's some not great ones. I do, before we jump off the Zato issue, they talk about him early in the episode being asleep for 14 hours. And I'm just like, guys, leave Zato alone. He's just in a depression, guys. Like, leave him alone. Let him have his 14-hour nap.
I wish I could take a 14-hour nap. That sounds great.
Hey, same. 14 hours of uninterrupted sleep? Hell yeah, sign me up.
Yeah.
But I do, one thing I do want to highlight too, like, we've talked about the relationship of the Rangers. I do like, there's that early scene where they go over the plan for this episode. Mm-hmm. And I love the dialogue with these characters, yeah. as goofy as it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of do. The opening scene is a little weird for me. First of all, it's a very long walk to, like, justifying Operation Seasoning that I don't think really pays off at all.
It is.
Like, I still don't understand why you're calling this Operation Seasoning. Why did you have to use salt and pepper? That doesn't really feel like that signifies Zords, but okay. Feels like you came up with the name and then worked backwards from that and justified using salt and pepper shakers. Anyway, okay, the whole bit where it's like, here's a cookie, I'm going to dunk it. I got to be Duncan. That whole moment is so weird to me. I don't understand what's happening.
That wasn't like a reference I was missing, was it?
Right.
No, I think it's just Zato being Zato when he gets to be cheesy from time to time.
Yeah, I think Zato's character at the end of the day, like, he is like the stoic leader, but like, he also is like, he's just a goofy guy.
Yeah, that's why that's there. I enjoyed it. I don't know. There's like a pattern of conversation that they're doing this season that I do like, where it's just like the characters kind of like, it's a lot of volleying, I think, is really kind of fun. Sure. And I don't know that we always get that with Power Rangers. Sure. So it's like nice when it shows up.
Yeah, I think the dialogue this season is I think what just weirded me out, because usually the dialogue this season is very sharp. And in that case, it was just sort of like, it felt more like the, everyone just says a quip that doesn't really have anything to do with what they just said beforehand. Like, oh, I don't really get it, but okay. But yeah, it's not a big deal. Yeah. I do like that they set up this entire plan and then the plan just immediately fails.
It falls apart.
So catastrophically. I love that because I'm just like, oh, I thought they were going to just like last second get figure out a way to turn away. Now those words are flying, but nope. They just straight up crash and go to prison. All right. Okay.
Yeah. The Zed prisons that now exist all over the planet, apparently, yep. Which is like wild. So you talked about like kind of like the planet failing and then them having to kind of pick it up. It is wild just Power Rangers having plans, because you'd think that'd be a thing that happens in a lot of seasons, but
not that much.
No, we're just going to stay in our Zord until it blows up and we lose our powers. Yeah. No big deal.
Yeah, there's very little strategy. And I do like that there's the whole thing where like they go in with one plan that fails. So they have to now do a other thing, which uses some stuff from previous seasons. And it's really fun. It does. So, I mean, now we can talk about it. Kind of, obviously, the reason why someone wanted us to talk about this episode. There's a certain person on Earth leading the rebel efforts. Tarek is here in all his daddy glory with his many new grays, it seems like.
I have a question. This is not this episode. This is the very first, like, I think, or not the first episode, one of the earliest episodes of the season. Why was he randomly in a Hawaiian shirt, like, early on in the season, and then they never show him in a Hawaiian shirt, and he's just, like, wearing flannel for the rest of the time? Was it a cut scene or something?
Cosmic Fury takes place immediately at the end of Dino Fury. So it's like the same day when they're like back at his back at the
Area 61 with his wife.
Yeah,
carry like that over was the same costuming, even though it kind of sticks out. Got it. Okay, never mind. Yeah. That's fine. The flannel makes more sense as a character choice for how they're dressing him. The Hawaiian shirt was a weird choice anyway, but yeah, sure. Okay. That was okay. I'm glad you clarified that for me.
And I guess we can talk about his fighting unmorphed. This entire episode is great every time. They're just like
they do some rad stuff with him. He gets to do like old school, like samurai fighting.
The delayed explosion thing.
Yeah, like you sliced a guy in half and then just sit there in your cool pose. I love that stuff. Yeah.
I love that the enemy is even like, what happened? What just happened? Like,
Oh, God. Well,
and the thing that, like, I think it just plays up so well is like the fact that, like, you know, he obviously had years to like train and like, you know, become the big bad that he was last season. And like, I always enjoy when the show has characters that get redeemed like this and they don't forget that they were big bads. Like, they, yes, he absolutely could take someone down on Morph because he's had to like fight and survive for like a long time. And so it's a lot of fun. Like,
I mean, there's the moment where like Tarek later is talking to Heckled is like, from one ex bad guy to another, you did great. And I'm just like, I think Tarek and Centaur are looking for a third.
Brief little tangent. The monster he kills, Wizo, I think is his name, the bird dude. What is his accent? Is he supposed to be Scottish or German or like both? I can't tell.
I have no idea what that was supposed to be.
I got Spanish, so maybe it's just mixed a little bit of everything.
It depended on his line. That was just an odd like, usually I feel like the monster voice actors on Power Rangers are pretty good about just like they pick a voice or an impression and then go in that direction. And this dude seemed just like, what are you supposed to be? It felt weirdly out of place for this show.
That suit is just a whole lot onto itself. I hate it in Q Ranger. I hate it here. But the one thing I will give the actor who voices on Wizo, there is the great line when Heckle does the burn on Skulia and on Wizo's like, my God, that is brutal. It was so funny. I was like, God. And I had to check because the way the guy was talking, the accent that he's putting on, it sounded like, my guy, that is brutal. And then the captions say, my God. And I was like, okay.
It was very... I mean, grain of salt here because of where I'm getting this from, but it says, Wizo's name, appearance, and accent are based on the director of The Room, Tommy Wiseau.
Oh, I mean, that would make sense why you couldn't really place his accent.
Accent,
for sure.
I don't know that it's a perfect impression. And it seems a weird choice for that character too, but yeah. It does clarify the direction that that character is supposed to go in.
It at least falls into the like impression. Yeah, if true, it falls into the sort of choosing an impression and sticking with it tactic.
And it does make sense. Like, I mean, they always, you know, your monsters are going to be like Christopher Walken impressions or whatever. Yeah. So like, it's always like big personalities with distinct voices or Sean Connery or something like that. So
or
like
Arnold Schwarzenegger, they've done a couple of those.
So actually like choosing, like it was sort of like, oh, it was only a matter of time before someone tried to do a Tommy Wiseau voiced monster. So,
wild.
Okay. Yeah. I like that a little bit more, even if it was not a fully executed attempt.
So, let's talk about the prisons and how they break out the distraction that they do to get the Rangers out.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a lot of buildup to it. And then we get to see big, gigantic Solon rampaging through the city.
Great. Fantastic. More. Give me
love
way
it
more.
So much. So good. However, missed opportunity. They could have had Zeno say, magic wand, make my Solon grow. And they did not.
God damn it. That would have been fun.
That's the only problem I have with this whole sequence. The only one. Everything else, A+, perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been perfect.
Well, and Josephine Davidson has so much, like, she does so good playing Solon. Like, she has so much fun playing this.
Mm-hmm.
She does, yeah. And I loved that when she grows, they cut to the Sentinels, and one of them goes, is that one of ours?
Yeah, it's good. So good.
I'm just like, that is good. I love the battle droid Sentinels. Best decision they've ever made with a foot soldier. I'm like, oh, they're so good.
Yeah, they're so fun. They'd have a lot of fun with them.
And then so like they get everyone out, and there's this one moment between Izzy and Javi and their parents, and I was fully expecting that this was going to be the moment where they're like, we're Power Rangers, we've got to go save the world. I understand this episode was packed. But it is weird that they're just like, yeah, we'll tell y'all later. Y'all run.
Well, I think they also connected the dots.
Yeah, it's like, this is your moment, guys. This is when y'all should have done it. But maybe it's one of those things that got cut, and the fact that this episode has to be a certain length kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
But it was interesting. I also, it's funny to me that Fern's family isn't here. And I understand that's mostly because we've not casted those characters, so they can't be. So yeah, it was very odd. But
I do feel like I do feel like Javi and Izzy's parents are a little bit underused this season.
Yeah.
Considering how much of a presence they were before and how much everyone else's parents are like able to be a presence. I mean, I truly don't know where they would have fit in the season.
Yeah.
I think everything that they would have done would have been in like the version of this series that was 20 longer episodes, you know? So
they do pack quite a bit, even just at little times. Like Lily's in this sequence. Like she's back for this.
Yeah.
Which was so fun. I was glad they brought her back.
True. Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, that's nice, so true. Yeah, because they really didn't need to have her there, but having her for one last cameo was a nice touch. That's true. I like that.
and I know people don't like them, but I like Jade and Jayborg. Every time they show up, I'm like, hey, there they are.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I like them.
Yeah, I like them fine.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, and every I love
nice
the little moments they have with Billy.
Couples on the show, you know.
Yeah, we don't know what goes off on screen. I have to put this out on the internet. Every time someone's like, does the like wish, they're like, well, I wish we would have got the Q Ranger suits. And I'm like, you know, the monkey paw curl on that is Jade and Jayborg are gold and silver.
100%.
If you would have gotten that, because that is the easiest slide into that. Damn. And I would have loved that.
That's like the best case anyone has ever made for doing the Q Ranger suits, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured they were going to make many.
That's the first time I've ever been like, maybe I would have rather had that, actually.
They would have fit with the footage, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like kind of my thing, is I thought when they. Just a tangent real quick, when we were like, oh, well, what Ranger powers could get what? I'm like, well, if we're going to fill the whole team, I was like, Dragon and Jayborg are right there. Just make them gold and silver.
Yeah.
But yeah. I do want to highlight the kind of, we've talked about this in previous episodes. I really like what they're doing with fight footage because they have to do it themselves. So there's like fun things like, you know, we have the Tarek fighting unmorphed, but we get like that moment with Billy where he's fighting Skulia and he like knocks her into the air with the power lances and then knocks her back down, which was really cool.
Yeah, there's a bit too where like Billy like catches Amelia as she's like doing her flip and helps her, and then they just end up back to back and just start talking. Like, it's good.
I meant to go back and watch that because it kind of blows my mind that that's a thing human beings can even do.
How do you pull that off?
I don't know.
Like so seamlessly too.
It's very dynamic. Yeah, like they were going out with a bang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it reminded me of like that moment, Derek, that you pointed out. Reminds me of like the 95 movie, because there's like the moment where Billy like flips and gets like Kimberly or Aisha off her on her feet again. Oh, yeah, it was a really cool moment.
Yeah,
it's just like little things, and I really liked that a lot. Also, I mean, it's just wild getting to see Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Blue Ranger and the Dino Charge Dark Ranger just next to each other. It's like
so much fun.
In a million years, if you told me to throw darts at the wall, that is not a thing I think I could have ever like pinpointed would happen.
Yeah, for so many reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's just, it's, you know, I think sometimes, not to deviate into a fandom conversation, but there's sometimes, like, with fandom, they get, like, so, like, oh, it didn't do this, oh, it didn't do that. And it's like, well, guys, look at the cool shit we got. Like, that would have never, we would have never thought this was possible previously.
Sometimes the appreciation for something is outside the universe of the thing. And that's really, I think, a thing that, like, Derek, actually, you kind of helped me sort of see that with something like No Way Home, where I was like, I don't think this movie's like that great. And you're like, but they pulled it off. Like, it's incredible that all these people are even here, you know? And I think sometimes like being able to just appreciate the accomplishment of the product is enough for me, at least. Mm-hmm. And I think should be for folks in moments like this to be like, maybe it doesn't make sense. Maybe we never would have expected it, but it's pretty fucking cool.
It is.
Well, I mean, the fact that we got David Yost to return not once, but twice.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And in like a full season, in a full season of a short season, but still a full season of a show. Like, you know, proportionally, he appeared in more episodes of Cosmic Fury than Jason David Frank did in Dino Thunder. You know what I mean? Like, it's so, like, I think, it is such a cool pull. And it's one of those things where it's like, they didn't have to do it and made it a point to do it. I'm sure I'm sure a big portion of the budget went to just signing that contract to get the original Blue Ranger in, you know? And they still did it and pulled it off anyway. Like that kind of stuff is
so and cool. In ways that make sense. Like, this isn't even a situation where you have to justify it just by how cool the accomplishment is, you know?
Yeah. And again, it's that thing, like, you know, kind of loop back to the start of the talk about this episode. You know, it's not a big deal that the like previous Rangers are here. And it's played like, okay, this is just part of what's happening right now. And it's really, really good. So I do want to talk about the last like scene of the episode because we have a great moment. The Rangers are getting their phones charged, which tickles me to no end. Cause of course, if you've been out in space for like a week, your phone's dead. You've got to, of course you got to charge your phone. But then the last moment that we get of the thing is the reveal that they have Squillia in prison, and it's played like the ba 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 da ba da, and it's like, guys, you can't play that over the fact you took a prisoner of war. That's not how this works, guys. It's not how you can end the episode. I was like, wait a minute, hold on. We're cheering because we took a prisoner of war. I'm just checking, guys.
It's like
Power Rangers.
I mean, they do just like kill mercilessly all of these monsters all the time, and we're like, you know,
And
also, she sucks. So, like, whatever.
it is funny.
It does get that good line.
It was
like,
just a funny moment.
She's asleep, and she's like, "But mom, I don't have to go to school. I'm rich."
It's such a good line.
Yep.
I'm sad. Okay, I thought that the episodes we covered had the moment with them and Mucus where they like are holding Mucus and them at gunpoint, and I'm sad that we don't get to talk about that because there's that meme that got made in the Power Ranger fandom where they're holding guns.
Yeah,
so funny.
Oh my god, yeah, that was.
Have
so
y'all
good.
Have y'all seen that? Or
no?
Yeah, we'll
see.
No. Oh my
There's a moment where the Rangers are like holding out their blasters and someone went in and added guns into their hands.
Like
so it looks
the
like they're handing their yes. And then comes in the back. Yes. I won't reveal the big joke of it, but it's very funny. There's a great thing they add into it. But yeah, So these two episodes were wonderful, and I'm so happy we got to have you guys onto this podcast to talk about it. I think these are kind of examples of what Cosmic Fury is able to do and do well. And I think it just shows what's great. But any other thoughts on Cosmic Fury before we kind of wrap up?
I'm just taking it.
I like it a lot. I think it's very, very good. I really like this season a lot. I don't know or care what fandom people said about it, because I'm sure there's things that are wrong and bad about it. I think this season fucking rules, and it's such a great way for this show that's run for 30 years to go out in a way that shows how much it has evolved, and still in the future could still have the capacity for evolving. I think it's incredibly well structured and well plotted, and I think they had a really hard task in front of them and a lot of challenges for pulling off what they're trying to pull off. And there's a version of this season where it's sort of where they could have just, you know, been like, we're just going to do the most typical little mini Power Rangers season you've ever seen and go out like that. And they chose to go in a wild direction that was to make a season that's unlike any other Power Rangers season that's ever existed. And I think they really nailed it. And I rewatched the entire season again yesterday in preparation for this.
Nice.
Because, you know, it takes like 5 minutes to watch the whole thing.
But
it just only made me grow in appreciation for it, because I really do think that there are very few holes you can poke in this season. I think it's just really impeccably plotted and written and executed, and it's just an absolute ride from beginning to end.
Definitely I wholly agree. And just like it again, you know, we just got off this whole topic of like appreciating it for what it is. It is wild to think that we got this in Once and Always, and they were likely made very quickly next to each other. And it's like, and for them to do what they did, to do them well, it's really an accomplishment. And I think and that's a shout out not only to like the actors, writers, production teams that had to turn stuff around really quickly. You know, everyone involved, I think, did a really great job and worked with what they had and made something great.
Absolutely.
I guess with that, that'll wrap up our show for today. If you want to reach out to us, you can hit us up on Twitter or Blue Sky, other option, at May the Power Pod or at maythepowerpod.bsky.social. If you want to email us, you can email us at maythepowerpod@gmail.com. feel free to send us topic suggestions, ideas, criticisms, or let us know if you're interested in coming on as a guest host like Derek and Doug have done. We're always happy to have more people on and chat with us. If you want to find me, you can find me on most social media at Thespis Punk. And where can they find you, Kevin?
You can find me on most social media under BridgeMT, BridgeMT3000, BridgeMT3. You can find me on Twitch. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me most places. Just look. If there's a post about Power Rangers, it might be me. Who knows?
And Derek and Doug, is there anything you guys would like to plug?
Sure. I think I would first plug the Glitterjaw Queer Podcast Collective, because that's where the majority of Doug and I's podcasts are. That's a podcast collective with queer people talking about media. So we have a whole slew of different podcasts from both me, Doug, and a whole bunch of other great queer people. And it's all media-centered stuff, movies, video games, TV shows, what have you. Some of those that I'm on include Gimmicks, where my co-host David and I look at the high concept, experimental, structure breaking, gimmicky episodes of TV. You guys have been on an episode about that for Power Rangers and other things too. And Doug and I do a couple podcasts together. I'll save you, Doug, and I'll plug those so you don't have to. Wallopy Web Snappers, Spider-Man podcast, where we do deep dives into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made. And our newest one is Screeonk, which is a Godzilla movie marathon. It's a monthly podcast where Doug and I are stomping through Godzilla's filmography.
And it's so much fun. If you're not, like, if you've not been into Godzilla before, that's the position I'm in. So it's actually like a perfect podcast. Okay. For people who don't really know where to start, because that's what Derek's like walking me through in like a really impressive way, if I may say so myself.
Well, thank you. Try to make it accessible to people who don't know or even maybe really care about Godzilla stuff, and maybe I'll make you know and care about it by the end of the journey. So
but, yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah. And I guess if you want to find me individually, Twitter, Derek B. Gale, other platforms, either that name or Dare Bear, Mr. Dare Bear.
Yeah, and I'm on a show on Glitterjaw called Novel Gaming, where my co-host Katie and I catch up on all of the books and video games and sometimes other media that we've been consuming that week. And I can be found kind of everywhere at Ikkybooley, Ickybooley.
Cannot recommend enough checking out all of the podcasts you guys do. I listen to a bunch of the episodes across all of them.
Thank you.
New stuff coming in 2024. New shows on the horizon.
Glitterjaw.com and Glitterjaw on every social media platform except Instagram. Instagram is at Glitterjaw Pods.
It's the one place we couldn't get it.
Yeah.
You'll have to fight to the death to get it from that one person. It'd be like, come on, gladiatorial combat, let's go. But again, just before we head out, thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys. We appreciate it for joining us and getting to hear us gab about this stuff. But with that, as always, may the power protect you.
May the power protect you.
May the power protect you.
And also with you. May the power protect you.